Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 555, Science Faction, Science Mystery Solved.
Yes, we have solved a science mystery because, fans, that's right. I, in an attempt to sniff out Bobby's bullshit, am recording this episode from a hotel room in Phoenix, Arizona. And let me just say, it is cold as fuck. In fact, the hotel I'm in, it is like snowing outside. Insane, because it was hot in the rest of the Southwest.
You're right, because Phoenix in the winter can get rather cold, which is shocking given that, as we all know, it's the hottest place on Earth in the summer. Damien, kudos to you for heading out to like the world's hottest location, even in the winter, because I know, you know, you don't deal with heat well, as emphasized by the fact that you thought Baghdad, a rather temperate climate, was very hot.
I just actually was on a Skype call with several of my former coworkers who are still enlisted. And they were
fellow
informing
vacationers.
Me, that is an insulting term for somebody who clearly hates our veterans. And I hate our veterans, too. But I hate us for the war crimes we did, not for some made up temperature thing that you're, you know, it's not important. Point is, over in Baghdad right now, they had three soldiers in the unit spontaneously combust at night in their sleep. Another 20 heat casualties in their sleep. And that's just the nighttime injuries.
I've heard of that. That's in their preparation for Phoenix training. All right. And speaking of preparation for Phoenix training, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my constantly temperature deficient co-host, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
You insult. It is freezing outside right now. They're letting homeless people in the hotel room that I'm in right now just because it is such a humanitarian crisis. People are burning buckets of feces for warmth outside, Bobby.
Yeah, like I said, it's like how Antarctica is a desert. Like, you wouldn't think of it that way, but it technically is, even though it's cold. Same thing with Phoenix.
That's because of lack of rainfall.
Freezing cold in the winter and the hottest place on Earth, as both you and I agree, in the summer.
We do not.
And even though Damien is in the world's hottest...
This is a very expensive trip. I don't have discretionary funds to do this, Bobby. I did this to spite you. And to see you write this off, you know what? You're moving the goalpost.
And even though Damien is in a place we both think is the hottest place on Earth, this can only be described as one of our coolest ever episodes, because this, my friends, is one of those amazing episodes that only come along every once in a while in which I get to say, hey, you know that thing I've been telling you is a crazy scientific mystery for half a decade? We fucking solved it. And in this case, not only did we fucking solve it, we solved two scientific mysteries, one of which is a mystery that I have constantly proclaimed is one of the biggest scientific mysteries over the course of this show to have been discovered, but maybe in the course of all time, and one of the most interesting ones that never gets talked about. We listed it on our most interesting science episodes ever show, our most interesting science stories of that year show. I've written about this particular thing. It is one of the most endearing scientific mysteries that first was discovered in 2015. We covered it at that point. I made it our number one most interesting story of 2015.
Why is archaeology so boring?
Well, it is an archaeology, well, not quite archaeology, more of genetics or human paleontology genetics type study. And this week it was solved. And so we finally get to dive into that. So without any further ado, I am so excited to get into this week's episode. Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
I see. I helped you, fans. Yeah, it's an archaeology article. So just skip ahead to the second half of the show. I'll do my best to salvage this, but prepare.
The only thing you're going to help to salvage, Damien, is your sweat-soaked underwear from being in Phoenix, because this episode is fucking gold.
That is due to a glandular problem that I have, and a lot of that is semen.
Oh my goodness.
I'll tell you what I tell the cleaning lady. A lot of that is semen.
Article number one, the biggest science mystery of the last 10 years is finally solved.
It was the physicist in the observatory with the particle accelerator? Wow.
I mean, to be fair, if it was like the astrophysicist, if he was in the observatory, according to the astrophysicist that we know, 100% of the astrophysicists we know could kill every other astrophysicist with his bare fucking hands. So, like,
what if we went to his class and we found out that Dr. Nick was actually like the runt of the litter, as it were?
He's like 6'3 and jacked.
And think about it. He works at the Antarctica station. They would want hardy stock.
That's very, very true.
I mean, after the events of The Thing, you can't just send nerdy field techs with heavy autism. You got to send cool action heroes down, like Dr. Nick.
You got to send the Thor of astrophysicist, Dr. Nick. Guys, this is an amazing story. I'm so excited to bring it to you. This is, as I've said before, I have written about this separately from Science Faction. I've talked about it a lot on Science Faction. It actually worked its way into my master's thesis. Like, everything about this is a huge thing that I have been stuck on for the past 5 years. And it goes back to one of the most endearing scientific mysteries that we have found in the last decade. So let's rewind all the way back to 2015. Damien, I believe I was yet to be married, and I think you still were married at that point.
Yeah, when was I born again? It coincided with the divorce from an unhappy marriage. I believe that was 2000. I think that was 2014, but 2015.
Okay.
Shit, what's in that ballpark, Bobby?
All right. Yeah, so things have flipped quite a bit. But if you go all the way back to 2015, you will find our number one science story, as we reported on our New Year's Eve episode of 2015, was an amazing scientific mystery that has piqued my interest for the past 6 years. There's probably not a week goes by that I don't think about this particular thing and its implications. That was the discovery of Australasian DNA within certain very specific tribes in South America, and it seemed to be an ancient admixture. So what does that mean? Australasians are a group of people that we consider currently to be the oldest lineage of Homo sapiens that made it out of Africa that still have living descendants, because there was a few that wiped out. And they are constituted by Aboriginal Australians, the natives of New Guinea and the Melanesian Islands, and the Andaman Islands off the coast of India. You might remember those. Those are the ones where that Christian missionary showed up and they shot him full of arrows. That place.
Heroes. Fucking heroes. They did what I'm too cowardly to do when Mormons come to my door.
I'll show you with your short sleeve button ups.
Yeah, castle doctrine. This is a self-defense addle-addle.
So they're a very ancient lineage that came out, and finding this DNA signature in the natives of specific groups in South America threw everything for a loop, because we know the genetic history of the Americas. We know that it was occupied by a group that came out of Beringia 15 to 20 some odd thousand years ago, that other than certain elements of North America, most of it was kind of one big giant migration that happened with a couple hundred people that became all the natives of North and South America, with the exception of the Arctic peoples that came later on, and that basically that group was by itself. And this weird, you know, Australasian DNA fragment made people think, holy shit, were the Americas settled by, you know, the relatives of Aboriginal Australians earlier? Because it wasn't a modern thing. It wasn't like this happened 1,000 years ago, some Aboriginal Australian on a boat made it across or something. We could see it was an ancient admixture, at least 10,000 years old. So that sounded like, holy shit, these Aboriginal Australians relatives must have met the original natives of North America somewhere in South America, because we couldn't find the signature anywhere else except for two tribes in South America. They must have met. That means maybe the Americas were occupied way earlier than we thought by a group that then went extinct, except for their relatives in these two tribes. It was mind-blowing. It completely changed our ideas of the occupation of the Americas, and it was a mystery. Nobody could explain it for the past 6 years. It constantly came up in everything from my work on the Cerruti Mastodon site to work on whether or not ancient peoples could cross the Pacific Ocean and dug out canoes. It was a huge deal, and it was...
Even in your research on how to steal I Call BS games from lifelong friends on a weekly basis, you found ways to work that in.
Yes, you are right, Damien. I do give you too many chances to win.
Nobody said that. Nobody said that, you piece of shit.
Must be hot there in Phoenix. You're already forgetting what you're saying.
I am, even though it is snowing on me and the frost from this hotel room, I feel like I'm a Texan in that winter storm not too long ago. I am filled with rage, and the water and ice is actually evaporating off of me right now.
So this is, again, kind of come up over and over again. It's one of the most endearing mysteries of human genetics and science, one of the most unexplained things that we have talked about. It had made my list, I think, you know, in 2018 or something, we did a list of our all-time favorite episodes, and this was one of mine, one of my all-time favorite stories, because it's still unexplained, and it was still a huge mystery, and it had such interesting implications for the occupation of the Americas and the history of human beings as we know it. Well, this week, it was finally answered. An amazing paper came out. It was described, I'll give you some of the descriptions from its coverage in Live Science, because as we're speaking, the formal publication is still coming out.
It was a Life of Pi situation, right?
Well, no. What happened was some geneticists looked at a huge data set looking at the genetic data of almost 400 indigenous peoples from all over South America. They used different statistical analysis to determine whether any of those native populations had genetic similarities with the Australasian groups, the ones that we had found in the two small groups in South America in that 2015 study. Well, they found that indeed a large swath of these people actually did have a very, very ancient admixture from a sister branch of the Onge, which is one of the indigenous Australasian people that lived on Little Andaman Island, which is off the coast of India. So there's a couple of interesting things just from that. One is this wasn't from the southern Australasian groups. This is one that was off the coast of basically Asia, the major part of Asia. But two, they narrowed it down to exactly where from. And what they actually realized is, no, this didn't happen in some weird group in the Americas where only two tribes in all of South America ended up getting it. No, this was actually broader. It happened in ancient Beringia, or maybe even before then in Siberia, basically in ancient Asia. It happened all the way back then, and the first conquerors of the Americas, the first occupiers of the America, brought these ancient Australasian genes with them when they traveled into it, and they occupied likely the coastal areas first. And so the reason we're seeing this in South America specifically is because it is likely, at least we think now, that the first occupiers of the Americas, it's not like they went and they occupied North America first and they moved down to South America. We actually think they coast hopped. So they occupied the west coast of both continents first before moving substantially inland. And so that genetic signature basically maintained itself. Very, very small admixture that, again, happened probably before Beringia or in Beringia. So it happened a long time ago. They had a little bit of that in them. And then through genetic drift and other things, the further you got away from the coast, as populations kind of genetically diverged from their original parent groups along the West Coast, they kind of tended to lose some of that. And so we saw it more pronounced in those West Coast South American groups. And it either was completely displaced in North America through prehistoric or historic colonizations. I mean, I've actually done a bunch of work on prehistoric migrations in North America, and there's very few groups in North America that have stayed in the same place for the past 15,000 years. There were Shoshone incursions and Yuman groups, and like basically there's been a lot of displacement of native peoples by other native peoples, whereas in South America, it looks like more of the peoples who occupy those areas are part of some of the original inhabitants or have some of the genetics of some of the original inhabitants that came there.
Yeah, if you throw some rainforest in the way, it really deters other tribes from coming to slaughter you. Like, if it's like, man, we gotta march 150 miles through the fucking rainforest to get to those guys, you know what? Fuck it.
Let's not forget colonization, which definitely impacted the west coasts of North and Central America much more than South America. So that also could have wiped out whatever was left of that signal. But yeah, basically what we've determined is this mystery of, you know, were there Australasians running around the Americas 15,000 years ago? No, there are Australasian groups or sister groups that bred in with the Beringial or even pre-Beringial groups, you know, 20 some odd thousand years ago. And those first occupiers of the Americas brought those little bits of Australasian genes with them. Because of genetic drift and diffusion and repopulation, et cetera, that got filtered out in those two New World continents, but stuck around on the West Coast. And now we can kind of map its distribution all across South America, including into inland Brazil. So we can actually tell this story that answers one of the most amazing scientific mysteries we have been debating in our heads for the past 6 years. This is fucking amazing.
I'm sorry, I was trying to think of the best Brazil joke. I couldn't decide between capoeira or Zika, but, you know, I'm sorry. racism aside, this is fascinating news. Unfortunately, it was an archaeological article, so can we pretend a paleontologist was saying it? Like, for the fans?
It's genetics, human genetics, it's, you know, occupation of the Americas. There is some human paleontology in there, because some of the stuff will be semi-fossilized. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm willing to overlook the archaeology in this, because there's a lot of really interesting stuff, like genetics and stuff. You're right, Bobby, I should look at the bright side. I shouldn't focus on the fact that we just had to learn about archaeology.
This is just such an amazing thing to read, to be able to report on. I can't believe we finally solved this mystery. I get to come back to you 6 years after presenting it and saying, I don't know what this is. This is amazing. This is the most amazing thing I've read in years. And I get to say, here is the answer. I wish I could give this answer to myself back then 6 years ago. Because again, it's something I have thought about nonstop since we learned about it. And it answers a bunch of questions. We have previously found a bunch of skeletons, even here in San Diego, the really ancient skeletons do have some features that look Australasian. And those have been originally they were thought, oh, maybe there were Australasian occupants. And then they were described as, no, this is just a wide variety of, you know, morphologies, phenotypes based on the original founding population. And now it's actually a mix. We know the answer is it's actually a mixture of the two. It's that the original founding population did have some Australasian genetics within them. And so, yeah, there probably was some just wide variety. And it was due to a genetic affinity between the two groups, thanks to an ancient mating from before they even made it into the Americas. So motherfucking cool. We haven't had one of these like really cool new world, amazing genetic discoveries since the one we talked about, shovel shaped incisors having nothing to do with teeth themselves, but instead having to do with vitamin D and milk production.
Breast milk.
Yeah. Very, very cool stuff. I am just super, super psyched on that. All right. Article number two, the second biggest science mystery in the last 10 years solved.
I'm listening and watch. It's going to be the more interesting one. $5. I'll put money down that, you know what? Not important.
Do you remember a little thing we talked about that really angered our guest physicist at the time? A little thing called the EM drive?
Yes. See, this was going to be my first guess, but I thought we answered it and it was bogus.
Well, so let's go back and repeat it. So what is the EM drive? The EM drive is this theoretical device that could produce thrust, very, very tiny amounts of thrust, without propelling anything out of it, which technically seems to defy the laws of conservation of momentum, et cetera, et cetera. It basically defies the laws of physics. But it was first suggested in like the early 2000s and then tested by NASA. And NASA released a report in 2014 saying, yeah, this thing gives thrust. We can't explain it, but it definitely gives thrust. And we covered it. Everybody covered it. It was a gigantic news story. And the physicist we had on the show at the time was like, well, this has to be bullshit. It violates the laws of physics, which...
Yeah, but to be fair, like, he had to cram those thoughts in between, like, a rants against women at the
time.
That's
true.
So, like, I don't know. I would have loved to have heard him expound upon those thoughts as opposed to the thoughts he seemed dead set on.
That's absolutely true. And I've often described him as the smartest misogynist I've ever met.
Take that, Francis Crick.
Yeah. I'm all for his disagreement with it because I'm someone who goes back to first principles. And, you know, if it violates first principles, then there. But also, if NASA is testing it and doing some pretty in-depth, like pretty extensive tests and saying, no, it's a very small amount of thrust, but there is thrust, there's got to be something to it. And multiple groups followed up. China did some impressive studies. They also found a little bit of thrust. It seemed to be working, but again, it's physically impossible. The way rockets or thrusters work, once you get out of an atmospheric environment, the only way to gain thrust is to shoot something out the other way, you know? And in some cases, that's hot gas. And sometimes, in some cases, that's like ions. You can literally shoot little particles out the back. It doesn't matter. But you have to have some amount of mass being shot out the back. And in this case, it was basically microwaves bouncing around and inside of an irregularly shaped container that produced, quote unquote, this thrust. And this would have huge implications for space travel. Because even if it was a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of thrust, in space, once you get going, you keep that speed. And each a little bit of thrust you put out gives you a little bit more speed and a little bit more. The problem is you wouldn't have enough fuel to shoot out the back to get going very fast. There's laws of inertia and momentum that just kind of keep that from going. But if you could do it with just like a device that was just producing electricity and shooting, you know, generating microwaves and shooting them around, well, actually then, even if it was a tiny amount of thrust, over time, you could get going near the speed of light. It had huge implications for space travel, which is one of the reasons NASA investigated it.
Is that why NASA won't allow you to bring a perpetual motion machine into space?
That is why they won't let you do that. Yes, that's the reason.
Okay, that's good. Not because they didn't want you wasting valuable cargo space on their fucking expensive mission.
Yes. Well, they published their results and everybody was like, what the fuck? And they got mad and there was some rebuttals published, and then China published their positive results. And again, a bunch of rebuttals published. And we covered this all back in the day. And again, to the ire of our physicist at the time, who was very pissed off that we were even talking about it. But it was legitimate scientific news and the publications kept going. We more recently covered what appeared to be kind of like a proof that there was no actual thrust on it, but yet nobody had really come to a final conclusion as to what had caused the appearance of thrust in the initial tests. A new study published this week, actually three separate studies that are combined together, does give the likely reason for those thrust readings and shows that indeed it is not creating thrust. It looks like what is happening is as that device is heating up, that oblong device is heating up, that heat generated is actually changing the center of gravity of the device, which is changing the way it hangs on the devices that are measuring those tiny amounts of thrust. And that slight shift in the center of gravity of the device based on that slight amount of heat is making it appear to be giving a thrust when in fact it's just shifting its location based on thermal expansion and the way it is now pulling on the scale. So it's something where it was very hard to find this out. These are tiny, tiny, tiny amounts of thrust. And once you're dealing with something like that, it's very difficult to get a signal from the noise. But it looks like somebody has finally figured out, oh, I have found, like, it's the James Randi, so to speak, except he's not finding out how somebody was trying to fool us. He found out how the experiment fooled the people who were trying to figure out whether or not it was giving thrust.
If you believe the government explanation, yeah,
I suppose that's fine. NASA is technically part of the government, and they were the ones who said it gave thrust.
Yeah, they're the ones giving us the, it's being looked at by top men.
Yeah.
Explanation. No, Bobby, Elon Musk will be flying to Mars using a EM drive. He will die en route because it doesn't work. But
yeah, very, very cool. I'm so psyched to do this episode. This is so neat. This was one that, like, I couldn't even bullshit with Damien in the beginning about how desperately unhappy he is in the heat in Arizona, like he's never felt before. Like, I didn't even have time to joke around about that kind of shit because I was so excited about these fucking science articles and being able to come back to stories that we've covered for now 7 years.
Yeah, you also had a very flaccid response to my shitting on your profession. So, I mean, you must have been pretty excited.
Oh, thank you. It is hard on my back to carry around a dick this big.
There we go. There he is.
Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 555, where we solve two of science faction's longest-running and most endearing mysteries, including the origin of the Australasian genetic signature in the natives of South America, and what caused the false readings of thrust on the EM drive tests. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 556.
Well, this trip to Phoenix was a bust. I'd drive back, but I'm snowed in.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.